when you grow up in a culture of accountability, and you see that accountability, my mom says she wanted to go to nursing school. She did it. She did it. She put in the process. She did the steps. My mom said she wanted to go back and get her bachelor's degree after she got her associate's degree in nursing. She did it. She wanted to get her master's degree. She did it. She said she wanted to try a new area of nursing. She did it. So it's about demonstrating what executing the execution of accountability looks like.
Welcome to the Raising the Steam podcast, hosted by M. Ross, where we're dedicated to raising the steam leaders of tomorrow. Discover inspiring stories, lessons learned, and actionable insights from the worlds of science, technology, engineering, art, mathematics, and medicine. Connect with us and a community of dedicated parents, educators, and STEAM supporters at RaisingTheSteam.com and at RaisingTheSteam on social media. Together, let's ignite curiosity and drive change.
Welcome to the Raising the Steam podcast. I am your host, M. Ross. Today, I am here with an amazing nurse, nurse educator, a PhD candidate in nursing, and my cousin, Patrick McMurray. Patrick, how are you?
Good. How are you? It's good to be here.
Doing great. Thank you for being here. Now, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Patrick McMurray. I have been a registered nurse for about 10 years. A little over 10 years, actually. My background started in the cardiovascular intensive care unit. I was caring for adults who had major cardiac complications or cardiovascular issues, or really any issues in their chest. That was where I started my nursing career at. I eventually went on to do some travel nursing and to end up working at a university medical center where I did what we call float pool. So it means that I not only went to cardiac areas, but I actually went to any adult health care area from the emergency department to what we call acute care, which is what we call medical surgical care, to various types of critical care and intensive care units like the burn ICU, medical ICU, and also, of course, the cardiothoracic ICU. And I started off my career by getting an associate's degree in nursing at Robinson Community College in 2013. Eventually went on to get my bachelor's degree and a master's of science in nursing that focused in nursing education. And finally, I am currently a second year PhD student, moving close towards dissertation time. So that's a little bit of an overview of who I am.
Awesome. So your career path has been pretty diverse. So you did clinical nursing, education, and also research. How do you think all of these experiences have shaped your view on healthcare and healthcare education?
They're really, really kind of complementary roles. A lot of my job as a nurse is to help teach people so I can help keep them healthy, or if they're sick, to help prevent their condition from worsening or help them to be able to transition from being in the hospital or in a clinic to home and being able to accommodate them taking care of themselves. So I use a lot of complementary skills between those roles. I got into nursing education about 4.5-5 years ago. While I was in grad school, I knew I wanted to be a nurse educator. I realized that, part of the thing I liked teaching patients, but I also liked helping nurses take good care of patients. And that was something that stuck out to me. So I realized I wanted to do that. And it kind of laid the foundation of what drove me into wanting to also be a researcher. A lot of the things I want to accomplish as a researcher are focused in helping people be able to facilitate having better experiences when it comes to the care that they receive and to their health. All of those things are kind of interconnected. They kind of touched one another. Me being a clinician really helped me see that I wanted to be a educator, and me being an educator helped me see that I wanted to be a researcher. So they're kind of all interconnected.
That makes sense. Now, do you think nursing integrates STEAM principles inherently? And if so, how so?
I do. Some people don't see the connection clearly, right? But nursing is a science, and not everyone realizes that. They think that nurses, give people shots and just follow the prescriptive orders that a physician writes. But nursing requires a lot of thought process, right? And there's science and research that supports how we approach care, why we do what we do in nursing. We have a theoretical basis. It is true that nursing is a fairly younger academic discipline. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the sciences, but there's a lot of science involved. I like to say that nursing is really a combination of the biological and social sciences together. In addition to it, it is an art. It is something that you can improve. It's very based off of experiential things, but we very much heavily use biology, principles of biology and microbiology, principles of, you know, understanding disease, you know, right? And in addition to understanding the socio-environmental, socio-political, and socio-economic factors that impact people's health and various phenomena around health and healthcare.
Definitely.
So we operate in the S part of STEAM a lot, right? But also T, because nurses are also inventors. We have nurses who have innovated software, innovated actual inventions, you know, hardware and things like that to help improve care. And that's a part of an expanded view of what nursing is. If we're moving past this idea that nursing is just someone working in a hospital or a clinic with someone, but nursing involves both direct care of individuals and families, and also indirect activities, including research and educating other nurses, and including innovating new things and new things in the nursing space as well.
Right. So, I mean, you pointed out that a lot of people might look at nurses as people who just give shots and follow doctors' directions. Do you think that's sort of outside of nursing, or do you think it's a perception within nursing as well? And if within nursing as well, do you think that there needs to be potentially some efforts to sort of broaden that perspective?
I think for sure. I think nursing has a lot. is a profession that was born out of like vocational need, right? And very practical need. So I don't feel like it does a disservice to the profession to admit that we have very vocational roots. And because nursing, just like many other healthcare fields, is based in the practical aid you can give someone.
Right.
And so I think that there's nothing wrong. I think a lot of people have a hard time linking something as being inherently scientific if it's inherently viewed as being vocational. But, you know, from vocation, we find practice and evidence. We generate those things to create expertise. And so it really aligns well with science. And I do think that it's a mixed bag, sort of. According to what your trajectory and your pathway into nursing was, you may view nursing solely more in that vocational space where you don't really consider it a science. You may feel like it's just more technical. You follow a prescribed way of doing things, and that's it. That is kind of mindless. I will say maybe some nurses feel that way. I think that most experienced nurses will realize that it's not at least completely vocational or technical, that there is a lot more that goes into it. But I do definitely think it's an external thing. People just don't have an in-depth understanding of what nurses do. And we understand why. That happens for a lot of complex reasons. The way that nurses have been positioned historically. It's been historically a field dominated by women who just inherently sometimes in society aren't viewed as authorities or they're not linked to this idea of academic thing about women have done a lot of work in the area of nursing and they've been the people who are at the forefront of helping other people see that nursing as a science. So to some degree, I do think that people in the field realize that it is a science. But according to how your community, what your belief system was and your positionality entering nursing, you may be more or less likely to view it as a science. But definitely, I think the larger community doesn't necessarily view nursing as a science. I think they know that nurses use scientific concepts or learn science, but they don't view nursing itself as a science.
Right. So you pointed out the role of women in nursing. And so your mother, Erikia McNair, who's my first cousin, and someone I interviewed as well, is also a nurse. Now, was she your influence in becoming a nurse as well?
I mean, she really was a big part of it. I won't say that she was the only reason, but she became a nurse when she was a single mom and raising me. And so My mom always wanted me to dream big, and she always encouraged me to dream big. I saw her work as a nurse, right? She became a nurse when I was 7 or 8. And I saw her, there was a time she worked as a home health nurse or in a hospice nurse. And so I would go with her on her visits to patients and ride along in the car and go with her back to her office as she was talking with other nurses and charting and things. And I would sit in the break room And I had a friend from school that whose mom was also a nurse for the same agency. And so we would pretend we were nurses. And so in my mom's example, I got to see how, wow, she's a really smart person. Like she, I remember she would bring home like the disposable stethoscopes that the hospital would be getting rid of and let me play with them and let me listen to her heart and let me listen to my heart. And I was really fascinated by it. And I was just like, oh, this is so cool. I remember she would let, she had, when I had the talk, right, when I got old enough, we looked at things in her book and she explained things in a very scientific way. And so I was just impressed. I'm like, I live with this person. So she was a large part of it, but she very much was like, oh, you don't have to be a nurse. You can be whatever you want to be. And so there, I, the first thing I ever wanted to be, remember wanting to be seriously was a nurse. And then, you know, you kind of start saying that to people and they're like, well, you're a boy. You can't be a nurse. Boys are supposed to be doctors. And I'm like, oh, okay. So in my 8-year-old mind, I'm like, well, I guess I have to do that. And you know, so I lived in this community where there was still this gendered attachment to the roles of nurses or physicians, right? That people thought were more inherently likely to think that a nurse was someone that was a woman, right? Or presented as a woman, and that a physician or a doctor was someone that presented as a man. So like those I kind of was still in that age. But around about 15 or 14, I kind of was like, forget all of that. You know, mm-hmm. I had seen examples of men in nursing with my mom's colleagues and that I had gotten to know. And that it was just becoming an increasing thing. You saw more men coming into nursing. So I think it was just like the right time. Right. And so around 14, 15, I said, you know what? After bouncing around all these different like other healthcare careers I had considered, from psychology to, you know, considering going to medical school, I settled back on nursing because I was like, nursing fit my personality. I have a personality very similar to my mother's. And it's one that lends itself to that idea of, you know, being very strongly founded in science and reason and logic, but also being very human centered and understanding how those dynamics may change or impact our scientific understandings of things. So.
No, that's awesome. So your mom did point out when I interviewed her that you were considering psychology up until about what you're saying, you know, 10th grade, which would be around that 15-year-old or age somewhere in there. And but yeah, like the backstory behind it, that you had been considering nursing, but, you know, all these other things were going on in your mind and you kind of just finally said, forget those things and went into it. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm very, very opinionated, right? I can be opinionated about certain things and I'm very headstrong when I want to do something that's like, and I got that from my mom, right? Like, hey, if you want to do it, you stick to it. And, I'm not easily deterred. So I kind of was like thinking about things and looking at the path of becoming a physician, or psychologists, or these other pathways that I considered, and the path of becoming a nurse, and what I wanted out of my career and what I want out of life and work-life balance and all those things, and how you progress, like could it be incremental or step-based, or did it have to be an all or nothing game? I looked at nursing and it provided all of that. It provided the flexibility I wanted. I could go to a number of different specialties, you know, without having to go back to school. I could go be an educator, a researcher, a leader, all within this one career path. I could work 3 days a week. I could work 5 days a week. And so when I was 14 or 15, I was just like looking, I was like, wow, there's so many options. Like, why wouldn't I do this? Like I can be as invested or I can like, you know, not have to be deeply, you know, vested in this world and still be able to do a really good job and provide a viable service to community. So
I mean, that idea around perseverance and being determined, that's something that comes up a lot when I have these interviews. So, I mean, and then myself, I know is also a very important thing. Do you have any thoughts on how you might help instill that in a child? I mean, you know, we're focused on kids who are interested in STEAM careers, but I think it's something that carries over to no matter what you're doing. What's something you think parents could potentially do to help instill that?
I definitely think I grew up with a culture of accountability just in our family, right? And, you know, my grandmother and my mom just come from this idea of like, it's what I call like, you have to do what you have to do, right? And and that accountability means that when you say something, right, something that comes from like our spiritual practice in our family is like, you let your yes mean yes. So even if I make a decision, I'm going to commit to something, I'm allowed to change my mind, but I need to be accountable, right? I need to be able to track that I'm actually meeting the goals I set for myself, that I'm actually, you know, whether, and the goal is not necessarily I have to go into a particular career, but that obviously I've set this goal that I want to have a job or position where I'm contributing to society in this particular way, or where by this point I've achieved X amount of things. And so when you grow up in a culture of accountability, and you see that accountability, my mom says she wanted to go to nursing school. She did it. She did it. She put in the process. She did the steps. My mom said she wanted to go back and get her bachelor's degree after she got her associate's degree in nursing. She did it. She wanted to get her master's degree. She did it. She said she wanted to try a new area of nursing. She did it. So it's about demonstrating what executing the execution of accountability looks like. And one of the things that I've learned from my mom and from our family is just that one of the biggest things about accountability is that you have to hold yourself accountable. You can model it for other people and things like that, but you have to you ultimately hold the reins. And so I think it's important with little things. You know, when I was small and I said, I wanted to try karate, or I wanted to try gymnastics, or I wanted to try soccer. If that was something I want to do, it's okay. Well, we're going to commit that you're going to give at least this amount of time before we come back. Right. So there's this expectation that even if I don't like it, I need to at least work through an initial trial period, if you will. Right. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay not to like things. But we don't flippantly make commitments, and we don't flippantly, we're going to be intentional. Right. So intentionality is a big thing. Right. When I said I wanted something, you know, a plan was in place. Well, if you want something, these are the requirements you're going to have to meet to get it. And I need to see that you're working, and we're going to do a check-in, right? Because I was a kid. I needed someone to help me learn how to be accountable. Mm-hmm. But even if it was small things, I wanted to go to the beach. I wanted to go get a new toy. Well, then you have to perform these certain metrics. Your grades have to stay up. You have to do this. Those little things help people be more intentional and help kids learn how to be more intentional and understand that I can't just relax back. This isn't going to be easy. I have to put in effort in order to be accountable. And then also creating an environment where I was free to ask questions, where I was free to express my discontent. I had to be respectful always, but I could express being discontent, or I wanted to change my mind, or where my desires and needs were diverging from whatever the current path was. I could have a discussion, and it was okay. And I was told it was okay to change my mind. But that changing your mind may mean that it's going to take more time, or have some temporary, not necessarily consequences, but some things that you're going to have to address, that you can't just drop everything and like run. Right. If we're going to be intentional, we're building something. My mom, I remember one time she was like, it'll be like if you were building a house out of bricks, and all of a sudden you decided you want the house to look a different way. Now, if you spent 6 months putting bricks in every single place, would you all of a sudden just like knock it over in one day and then start over? No, more than likely, you're going to try to figure out, how can I achieve my dream with the current bricks I have laid? So that's like an example of how
good.
I was taught accountability.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. That's awesome. Now, I mean, one thing I know about you is that you're a huge reader. How important do you think lifelong learning is for professions in nursing and other STEAM fields? And how can educators and parents help kids value that, meaning lifelong learning?
It's super important, right? I work as a nurse educator, and I am, you know, a burgeoning nurse scientist. So I'm a scientist, and I'm learning how to develop my own program of research in science. And I read a lot. I still read, like, right? I think that there's this perception that sometimes being a scientist, being an educator, being a nurse, being in STEAM means like, oh, you've achieved something, and that you kind of achieve something, you plateau. Like, you don't, oh, I've gotten here, I'm good to go, I don't need to do anything else, and that I'm an expert. And you do become an expert in your field, right? That is very true. But one thing we have to realize about expertise is a constantly revolving door, and it's a constantly evolving thing. It's never, when your expertise becomes static, it can become defunct so easily. So a part of me being a good nurse scientist, being a good nurse, means that I have to constantly read, because the way that we check blood pressures and administer medications today looks very quite differently than what we did 20 years ago, and even in some cases 10 years ago when I entered nursing. Mm-hmm. So part of me being a responsible person and a responsible part of this profession means that I have to like constantly update myself and update my understandings and check whether our previous understandings match with what we know today, right? Because science doesn't stay stationary. Technology isn't stationary. Engineering isn't stationary. Arts aren't stationary. You know, math, you know, there we found, even though some of these things, we have like really strong and foundational concepts that anchor us. We are constantly learning new things about the universe, right? So me reading, I read outside. I make sure to read outside of just my profession, right? I read, and one of my biggest influences as a scientist is actually a theoretical cosmologist, Dr. Shonda Prescott Weinstein. I like love her to death, and I have no background in astrophysics, but I love astrophysics, right? I love it, and I learned so much about the praxis of science. Even though it's a science that's very different from my own, I learned so much about the practices of how we approach science, how we view science from that. And so I read these papers outside of my own profession in order to understand, because it helps me. We realize that sometimes what happens in STEAM and in higher education is we have these silos, like, oh, nursing mm-hmm. only exists in the health sciences. So you can't collaborate or learn from anybody outside of the health sciences. Or nursing exists here, so they can really only learn from sciences that are adjacent to nursing, like social science or biological or clinical sciences. But what you find is that that's such a limiting thought process, right? Because nursing has a lot to learn from how other professions, both in science and that are focused within the, you know, the natural sciences and outside of the natural sciences, how they approach things, how they approach how they educate their students, how they approach how they practice, how they approach sharing information with everybody. So I think that there's so much that we need to invest in, and that you realize part of being a good scientist, being a good nurse, means that you have to stay up to date, that you have this responsibility to stay up to date and to understand how your profession is growing and how it exists in this world where other things outside of it exist, right? How it coexists with other sciences, how it coexists with other knowledge. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you kind of talked about how things evolve in science and technology. And one of the things that has been getting a lot of attention lately is artificial intelligence and how that might mm-hmm. affect every field. So within nursing and nursing education, how do you see AI affecting things in the future?
It's definitely interesting because, like, particularly when you get to healthcare, people get very hesitant to think about, oh, this is scary. What I'm seeing now is that there are pretty much two to three camps in nursing and nursing education. There are people who are very just like, oh, this is unethical. This is like, you know, robots are going to take our jobs. And you know, that's kind of one of the extremes, right? And then there's the other people who are like, oh, great. This is awesome. We can use it for everything, which I kind of view as another extreme. And then there are people in the middle who realize like AI is another tool, right? And I think rather than having this deprivation mindset or this fear-based mindset with anything, I don't advise that. That's not my praxis. As a person, to have a fear-based approach to things as an immediate response, at least, you know, I think we should be very inquisitive. So there are a lot of us who are we're looking at the educational level, how, you know, we realize students have access to these AI tools, and rather than trying to ban them, we need to understand how they work and mm-hmm. What are some ethical ways that students can use them. And you don't realize that we use things like that with like Grammarly, right? That was kind of an example of how people can use this software that helps kind of look at language and helps you improve your writing and keep up your grammars more than, and we use that with like WordCheck with Microsoft. So we don't realize like, even though those aren't necessarily AI directly, we found like we use these technologies as resources this whole time. And now Grammarly does have AI that it can use, that there are tools that can be used. And just like any tool, right? You can use a wrench to help, you know, tighten up something and help, you know, in the construction of something, or you can use a wrench as a weapon and break somebody's window or something like that. So tools aren't inherently evil, but the way that we use them is what gives them, you know, their is what we have the most concern ourselves with. So we're seeing a mixed bag thus far in nursing. A lot of people are realizing that it is here to stay. So, you know, rather than being completely resistant, we just need to establish standards for its use in an ethical and moral way for both students and from a clinical pathway and from a research perspective as well, because we have people like everything from like you can do literature reviews using an AI tool. But we understand why there's nuance there, why, you know, you shouldn't over rely just on this AI to do all of your literature searches and write reviews and summaries of things. But how it can be a helpful tool in sorting out things. So again, I think we're very much in the in-between right now. I'm very much of the camp of just that we just need to embrace it and learn how to establish standards for how to use it ethically, both from a clinical perspective and a scientific perspective and in the education space.
Absolutely. I think that was a very thoughtful response. I appreciate it. So Patrick, let me ask you, if you were able to go back in time and give advice to little Patrick, what would that advice be?
Okay. Wow. I think I might would have told myself to not stress so much because I was so driven, right? And I was ambitious to get where I wanted to be so quickly that I think I created a lot of extra stress on myself. And in retrospect, right now at 31 years old, I became a nurse when I was 20. You know, I went to a community college. Not that I couldn't go to, I had the opportunity to go to a university. I chose to go to a community college because I wanted to be a nurse. It would make me a nurse about a year or plus sooner, and I could start working and I could start, you know, doing the things I want to do. I knew I could do like these programs, in nursing. Nursing's a little different of a field because, there are multiple educational pathways you can take to become a registered nurse in this country, and it's a little different, right? So you have a lot of options, and I wanted to take an option that would be cheaper and quicker, but still allow me to have a really good and solid education. So I went to the community college system, and I got that same community college my mom went to, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think that after I finished that, I would have asked myself to take a year just to have time. I jumped right into going pursuing my bachelor's degree because once you have your nursing license, your RN license in nursing, your bachelor's degree is really more, it focuses on more didactic and not hands-on skills. So there's not another test to take. There's not really anything else. So it really is based in like more didactic coursework and soft skills that you are developing. So I wish I would have taken a year off from school, but I pretty much went straight back in. And I had a moment where I felt burnout. I have like pretty much been in school in some capacity continuously the whole time I've been a nurse. I've not really taken more than a 6 to 8 month break off from school at any moment in time. I had various times during the pandemic where I took, you know, I could take a leave of absence from school because I was working as a nurse in the hospital during the pandemic. But I wish I would have kind of like, I feel like I probably could have still achieved some of the goals because I had these, sometimes I was like, by 25, I'm going to have my doctorate. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But what I realized is like, what was the purpose of me rushing that quickly? Was it just because I wanted to say I had my doctorate by 25? Or was it because like, was there a particular reason? I realized there really wasn't a reason other than just to be able to say I did my doctorate when I was 25. And to me now as a PhD student that's halfway through and at 31, I'm like, it literally means nothing if there's not a reason beyond just I want the accolade at that point in time.
Right.
I do think it's nothing wrong. I just think be more intentional and don't be in such a rush. It's okay for things to take time. It's okay to experiment and say, I want to try this different angle. There are times, honestly, I would never not be a nurse. I don't think that was ever anything I would ever want to erase. But there are times where I was like, oh, well, maybe I would have gotten my bachelor's degree in nursing, I would have pivoted to get an education in another field completely different. Mm-hmm. That way I had different educational viewpoints and different disciplinary viewpoints. Like maybe I would have pursued a degree in public health, or maybe I would have just pursued a degree in science education or something like that. I don't regret the path I took, but I would have invited myself to explore like, hey, it's okay to be a nurse and something else.
Right.
I think I thought everything had to be all nursing, and I don't regret it this far. I've still kind of achieved that. be a nursing path. But I think I would have been told myself to keep my mind open as to, it's okay to have your undergrad be in one field and your graduate degree be in a different field. And the great thing about nursing, it provides flexibility where you can still be a nurse and work part-time or per diem and be pursuing a completely different field and bring these two different worlds together to make it work for you. So I would have told myself to be open-minded about that and to take ownership of being innovative and wanting to do something that's different and have a path that's different and that's not straight line and trajectory, you know, right?
Mm-hmm. So cool. Well, Patrick, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I mean, I literally remember when you were born and now you're about to be Dr. Patrick, PhD. That's amazing. I'm really proud of you, cousin.
Thank you. I appreciate it, cuz. I'm trying out here, so. And you know, we have a good legacy of education in our family. You know, I have you to look at and my mom. And so, you know, I appreciate that. You know, I think that was another thing that inadvertently I see that other people in my family did it. So it didn't seem impossible for me. So that's important.
Awesome. All right, Patrick, take care.
All right. Thanks.